Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with Scott Eckersley. Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Scott, it's amazing. The debate is almost here, here and gone. It'll be here Sunday, and maybe we'll be talking about it for a while next week and see where that leads. Want to bring in our first guest, as we do each week at this time, Bill Ballinger, the editor of Inside Michigan Politics. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hi, Jack.
Well, one debate. It's doesn't seem like a lot, but it's all we get.
Yeah, 7 o'clock Sunday night. It's going to be televised statewide. I actually will be on public television with Tim Skubick and Chuck Stokes from Channel 7 in Detroit, and Ron Swankowski, the editor of the Detroit Free Press, and another Detroit television reporter doing commentary on it for half an hour after the speech. So if you want to hear bloviation after the debate, probably radio is better, but TV has that much to offer.
Well, we certainly would want to tune in and hear your insights afterward. How long do you think this debate will go?
You mean the debate about the debate or the debate itself?
The actual debate.
You know, I'm not sure whether it's an hour or 90 minutes, to tell you the honest truth.
Okay.
I thought it was an hour, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, I think it is an hour, yeah. So that would mean from 8 to 8:30, you and Skubick and Dunkowski and Chuck Stokes would be on.
Yeah, we'll probably be speaking into an empty echo chamber at that point. People will have switched off when they know we're coming.
Well, that would be on WKAR locally?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
All right.
Any public television station, yeah.
Gotcha. Want to talk a little bit about an endorsement. We're going to have Joe Schwartz with us in just a couple of minutes. And this is not the first time he has endorsed Mark Schauer. He has a long history with Tim Walberg. Were you surprised at all? Because it looked like he was waiting and didn't come out as early as maybe he had in the past.
Well, maybe he decided to have the maximum pop waiting to this point. I mean, if you do it a little bit too early, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle. There's a month to go, and I'm sure he probably did it in coordination with a Schauer campaign. So right. I'm not surprised at the timing or unsurprised.
All right. What does this say about Mark Schauer and Tim Walberg? Obviously, there are different kinds of Republicans. And that is demonstrated very well by Tim Walberg and Joe Schwartz. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of agreement there on style or substance. And it isn't often we have a Republican coming out and endorsing a Democrat.
Hey, well, that's true. I think the real question might be, since I happen to know that Schwartz believes that Walberg is too conservative for the 7th District.
Right.
He also believes Schauer is too liberal. And so the question would be, does he feel that Walberg is farther to the right than Schauer is to the left, or what?
Mm-hmm.
He might have chosen to just take a pass on this.
Right.
People know what his feelings are. He made an endorsement in 08, and he might have just kept silent. But evidently, he feels more strongly that it's important to send a message to Republicans and independents that he personally, Joe Schwartz, does not agree with the philosophy of Walberg as embodying Republicanism.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels that's more important message to get across than how he feels about Schauer, because I happen to know that, you know, Schwartz feels that Schauer is definitely too liberal for the district.
Right.
Obviously, Joe Schwartz feels he's just right for the district. He's perfect. He's moderate. He's in the middle.
Right, right. When we talk about situations like this in the Republican Party, there used to be an animal called a moderate Republican. Are they virtually extinct?
Yeah, they really are. And, Joe Schwartz is, been called a moderate Republican. Actually, Joe Schwartz is
pretty conservative
to me, compared to the Republicans back in the 60s and 70s
right.
that I served with in the legislature. We used to have people back then that weren't just moderate Republicans. They were called liberal Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Remember John Lindsay and Jacob Javits,
yes,
and Tom Kuchel, who was a U.S. Senator from California.
Clifford Nelson Rockefeller.
Tate from New Jersey. I mean, these people,
yeah,
were real liberal Republicans. Nelson Rockefeller was,
yeah,
considered kind of a liberal Republican.
Yeah.
Liberal Republicans just literally are extinct. Now you call them moderate, and to me, they're kind of tame compared to the moderate slash liberal side of the Republican Party I remember from 30, 40, 50 years ago.
You know, Bill, the last time I spoke with former Governor William Milliken, and the longest-serving Michigan governor, I asked him about how he would do and what he would do as governor today, and he said he would be unelectable today.
Well, he really would. It wouldn't just be that he'd be unelectable. He might be electable if he could ever get a nomination.
Right, right.
He's
right.
Unnominatable.
Unnominatable, right.
He couldn't get the nomination in his own party. In fact, when Milliken was governor, you know, he wasn't necessarily considered some kind of wild Indian liberal Republican. But with the passage of time and the movement of the Republican Party to the right,
right,
and Milliken basically remaining unchanged in his beliefs,
right,
he's come to look more liberal and moderate than he really was at the time he served.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because he was talking about the tremendous differences he had with Coleman Young, then Detroit's mayor.
Sure.
And I said, so how were you able to get legislation passed? How were you able to strike this balance? And he said, you know, there were deals cut and people did things and there was a lot more compromise. Today, compromise is a four-letter word.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There's no question about that. And I think, you know, people knock term limits, and I've never liked term limits. I voted against it when it was on the ballot in 92. I think one more demerit against term limits is that it clears out the legislative chambers of people who used to be able to stay there long enough to really get to know each other and develop trust and be able to work with each other, even though they came from various different parties and different philosophies in different parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get this constant turnover, and people come in and they're elected with enormous amount of financial support from interest groups that are skewed to either the right or the left. So the new legislators come in already with a mindset that is probably a little more ideologically rigid than their predecessors. And then they get in there and they don't have time to really find out that their opponents on the other side of the aisle aren't maybe quite as outrageous and unreasonable as they've been led to believe. And as soon as they begin to figure that out, they're gone because of term limits.
Bill Ballinger, editor of Inside Michigan Politics, our guest. Bill, how many states have term limits?
I think originally it was 16, and I mean, one or two states have amended or gotten rid of them. We may be down to about 14. I think we have the second most extreme version of term limits. You can ask Joe Schwartz about this, because he's railed against term limits for a number of years. I think there's only one or two states that have term limit statute that is more draconian than Michigan. I mean, in other words, 3 2-year terms in the House, 2 4-year terms in the Senate, and then you're banned for life from ever coming back to those chambers.
You know, I talked with someone who said they thought there should be term limits for the executive branch in Washington. I was puzzled, and I said, but there already are. You have two terms. That's the max. He said, no, in this case, with the Obama administration, they wanted one term being the limit. So,
well, let's put it this way. Only one term, and then you get a chance to throw them out if you want to. If they survive, they get the second term. But you're right. We never had term limits on the executive branch until, remember, the Eisenhower administration in the early 50s passed term limits for presidents. But for Congress, it's been ruled unconstitutional. You know, our term limit initiative, it was on the ballot in 92, included term limits for Congress.
Right.
But it was struck down by the courts as being unconstitutional on the grounds that only the U.S. House of Representatives itself and the U.S. Senate can judge the ground rules for membership of their chambers. No individual state or outside body can do that.
Bill Ballinger, our guest, editor of Inside Michigan Politics. Bill, very quickly, our last question. John Dingell has been a congressional institution in this state, and now running into a lot of problems. Is he too old, too liberal, or too establishment?
I think all three for a lot of people. The real question is he in any real danger of being defeated this year? He's got an aggressive Republican challenger, a wealthy doctor named Rob Steele, who's giving him a run for his money. I think the Dingells tend to get panicked when the polls show that they'd win by anything less than 70%.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure John Dingell is going to be a victim on November 2nd. I would bet in favor of John Dingell.
Okay. We had some Rossman polling that showed that he was in a very, very close race, but we're going to take Bill Ballinger's word for this. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
And, my pleasure, Jack.
We'll talk with you again next week.